Hello.
Woo!
What's going on?
I had the volume up all the way.
Oh, I'm coming in loud.
Loud through the skull.
Yeah, blow your eardrums out.
I have been penetrated by your voice.
Yeah, I did a black canary on you.
The sonic scream.
A banshee.
Yes. Pick your company.
Yeah, or D.Va from Stormwatch. How
Oh,
about
yeah.
that?
That's an obscure pull.
Yeah.
Because you were reading some.
I was.
I saw that. Gave me a preview.
Yeah, you always get a preview.
Yeah, I can usually peek at what's coming. And then I like to surprise you, so I don't usually post too much.
Yeah.
So then I can hear you searching your database in the
That's
background,
right.
make sure you own it.
Say, damn it. How
Damn
did
it,
I
you
miss that?
did it again.
Foiled again. As I twirl my mustache.
Your whiplash
Yeah.
mustache.
Foiled again by
Whoa.
Dudley Do-Right. Well, there's another black canary scream. You have company.
She's looking out the back window. She hopped up on the she hopped she hops up on her back legs and looks out the back window, and she can we're on the second floor, so she can Mabel so she can see the neighbor's backyard,
Oh.
and they let their little dogs out back there, so she's trying to communicate.
Yeah.
She's not that's fine because she's her tail's
Is
her
she ever
tail's
outside when the other dogs are outside or no?
yeah, now that we have the fence it occurs
Is she social with them or?
she can't really see them because it's a 6-foot fence.
Yeah, but she could see them through the cracks, right? I mean, there's little.
Yeah, she can kind of get a glimpse or whatever, and she'll go over to try to get near and stuff. She's usually we have a beagle across the street that came over and for a play date
Yeah.
the summer, and they were hanging out in our backyard together, and she gets along with that dog. These are different dogs. She's never met them, but
Oh.
come here. What's going on? That went pretty well, except for she kept it's a smaller dog, of course, so she kept trying to hump it or hump her, I should say. That's a
Yeah.
girl. And so it's funny because it's t two girls. So
Yeah.
she's still trying to dominate.
Establish dominance.
Yeah. I'm like, Mabel, what are you humping with?
You
'Cause
have a dominant Donna Matrix dog.
yeah. Keep her away from the strap-ons. Oh, that's
Yeah.
awful. Don't say that about my dog. Where you go? Now she's gonna go across the hall and jump on the bed and try looking out that window. She's on patrol.
Let me
But
make sure
anyways.
this is recording. I'm still using the old software. I'm
Yeah, you
getting
can't
warned
miss this
every
gold. Don't want to lose this gold of
Yeah.
quality podcasting. So, Rob is not with us this time. He's out on assignment.
Yeah. He just
President.
finished his X-Men collection and he's out celebrating.
Oh, did he? I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Send
He bought
some.
the last two. He did it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought I felt the.
Disturbance.
The imminent the wave of celebration.
Yeah.
Someone just achieved a comic book goal. I can sense it. Oh, that's cool.
That's what we need to develop is a comic book goal app. And then you could like see if you've achieved these goals.
Yeah, we could do it with like RPG kind of goals where you like
It's
level
like a
up.
yeah, it's like a beer app, except it's a comic app. Like it's like the Knutson app.
Yeah, we could design it because I use that app too. I cheered last night. I cheered one of Keith's check-ins on there,
Oh yeah.
or toasted it. Like you can see your friends' activities, and you can toast them.
He was drunk yesterday, I could tell you that.
Was he?
He does some weird things.
Did you, were you guys recording last night?
No, he we have a DC Noise what do you call it, Facebook instant messenger.
Gotcha. A little
Yeah.
group. Yeah, I'm looking on the app right now. I'm seeing 11 hours ago, he checked into Frozenkanner Hef of Weissbier
There you go.
and Torpedo Extra IPA. That's not as fun to say.
Now.
Yeah, he was at the Comic Con and he stopped on the way home to get a growler. And then he must have killed that growler because then he was checking into the other beers after the growler.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he said even a delicious standby whilst my growler has been depleted.
How big is a growler? It's just one of those big mugs, isn't it?
You can get them in different sizes, but I think a standard growler is like 64 ounces.
Yeah.
Which is like a normal beer is 16 ounces.
Ah.
So you could probably do that math faster than I can.
Yeah, it's a lot of beer.
That's, I could have said that. 64 divided by 16, that's four beers.
Yeah, plus all the others. It wasn't just the growler, right?
Right, that's
I
what
was
we.
just starting the party.
Then he had some more after that. It's like that's not enough.
Yeah,
That's just starting the party. But yeah, see that's what happens when you get English degree kids. You end up having to use a calculator to divide
yeah.
64 by 16. So all you young children listening,
They're already in calculator mode.
take your
Take your iPad out and crunch it away.
get a degree in something that will get you a job. And that way you can buy lots of comics like Mike.
Yeah. Need to buy
But,
comics.
right. And don't have children.
They'll take away from your comics.
When you guys, when you guys first got married, did people ask you if you're gonna have kids a lot? Did
I
that
still do. I
question
mean, it's
come?
still a
You
question.
still get it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That amazed me after Kara and I got married was how frequently people asked that question.
Yeah.
'Cause to me it seems like a personal thing, you know?
It
So
is.
I started to get
It
testy with people.
starts with family. You know, like aunts
Right.
and uncles and stuff like that. Then it gets into some coworkers and such, and I don't know.
That's what would get me was that would be the coworkers. I wanted to start telling people that I was firing blanks and to make them feel bad. So you want to ask a personal question, I'll give you a personal answer.
Yeah. I'm a eunuch.
Yeah. That's even better. Like, actually my penis was mauled by a wild animal when I was a child, and just a mess down there, so
Yeah.
it's not happening.
There you go.
But
Never get asked that again.
exactly. I don't know what made me think of that. But yeah. Oh man, I miss you and I miss our friends that go to the Comic Cons
Yeah.
that I've seen, 'cause I didn't get to Baltimore and I don't know that I'm hoping to go to Baltimore this year, but I don't think I'll make it to Heroes and it seems like a long way away.
Yeah.
Wait for Baltimore because it'll be have been over a year. It just
I'm
once you
only
get to
going to
one.
one con this year because we're having my mom and dad's anniversary, so I don't know which one we're going to, but it'll probably be Heroes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Baltimore will probably fall in August or September, maybe October, I don't know.
Baltimore, I'm almost positive, is late September this year,
Yeah, and that's
like it
close
was
to
two
my
years
other
ago.
vacation, so
Oh, that's
I
interesting.
can't
Well, that
take
may
the
change
whole
my
month
plans.
of August off in September.
Right, yeah. You can't be away from work for that long.
Yeah, not in that length.
Well, that may change my plans then, because I will need to see you and Barb somehow.
Yeah, you should
So
switch it.
we'll talk more later. We'll talk more later, but we'll see.
We
But yeah,
gotta
once.
still wa start watching the Battlestar Galactica. I don't even know if it's on Netflix anymore. I haven't checked.
I can check, but yeah. Yeah, maybe we can get Rob interested in that too, but
Yeah, we could
I kind of
marathon
got
it.
dropped with the
Catch up to us.
yeah.
I think we're on like six or five or six, I think it is.
Yeah, we can look back. Yeah, I'll just tell him, like, take a pause on watching 100 horror movies and
Yeah, catch up.
catch up with Battlestar.
I have the DVDs, so I could watch them in that form, but you probably don't.
No, I don't, but it's probably still on that. Damn it. What is my Netflix password? And be like Knutson with Skype here.
With the fact with the scan it in.
So trying to log back in. Manicore, let
That what
me
your
in.
password is?
Yeah.
Named after Keith?
My password is Knutson is HOT. Wait, what?
Too bad you didn't get to spend more time with him in Baltimore.
I know. Well, it was actually Heroes that I met
It
him
was
at.
Heroes, yeah.
Yeah. I know. I'm glad I finally got to meet him. That was the first time I got to meet him, but
But you want to drink some beer with them.
yeah, exactly. Well, we technically we both had a beer at the pub, but I was wanting to really get into it.
Yeah.
Which we didn't, but I'm glad that I got to meet him and that I got to see him twice because we randomly ran into him as we were heading in that the next morning.
Yeah, we don't even see him
Got
that
to
much.
walk around with him a little
It's
bit.
usually one day. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
usually one day, and then we see him sporadically. And we'll get one lunch or dinner with him if we're lucky.
Right. Yeah. It was like with everybody else though. Just very natural meeting them.
Yeah.
Very comfortable. Just slid right into his arms like I've been hugging him my whole life. And then Campbell picked him up on his back.
Galactica 1978. Oh, fuck, it's off.
They took it off Netflix.
Yeah, they sure did.
Son of a bitch.
DVD only. Fuck.
I wonder how much it is on
Oh, it might be on Amazon Prime. You have that too, right?
Yeah. I don't want the new shit. I want the old shit. $23.49. That's to
Whole thing.
buy the complete epic series. Yeah,
Oh,
Richard Hatch
Richard Hatch? Yeah, I was just gonna
passed
say.
away.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing at him dying. I'm laughing at us saying it's
No,
time.
yeah.
Obviously. Yeah, I wonder if it's on Prime. Gather around, ye listeners, as We
We
search the
explore the
internet.
streaming.
We explore the wild wilderness of the
That's the
internet.
danger of Netflix. I wish they would always. I wish I'd get an email or something like a month in advance or something that says, "Hey, you have this in your queue. You're watching it. It's going away in 2 months. You better get on it." You know, like some give you some kind of
Right. Yeah, because they have those lists that go out that people do. They'll put them on the Taylor Network too, where you can look each month what's coming and going, but you have to seek it out and search it. But it wouldn't be that hard for them to set up some sort of algorithm or something that if something is leaving the service and you've watched it in the past, it'll shoot you out an email. But they probably don't want to call attention to things leaving. But it'd be a nice
Yeah.
service. It'd be a nice service.
I see the movie that you can rent, but I don't see the series. Battlestar Galactica, the complete epic series. There it is. DVD. Bastards.
It's unfortunate that they have to rely on the contracts that they sign with the companies.
Yeah, what is Blood and Chrome? Is that like a DVD that was re is that
I think that's the new series, I think.
There's a new series going on now?
No, I mean it was
I know, but was it before the series or was it after the series? Like was it
I'm not sure. I think I have to look it
I
up because I didn't watch the new one. But I just
watched
remember seeing that name
I
before.
watched the new one. And then I watched Caprica,
Right.
at least the movie. And then I don't know what this Blood and Chrome is.
It's not new since then. It was from around the same
Well, the
time.
series kind of had a finale. I don't know what they can do with it afterwards.
Battlestar Galactica 1978, unavailable to stream. Blood and Chrome.
But I was wondering, like, that they must have been like real fans of the original series because they took elements, like, now that we're watching it, they took a lot about their gods and stuff and their 13 tribes or whatever, and they put it into the new one and made it more religious, if you will. Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of connections, it seems like. Okay, here, actually, I was wrong. Blood and Chrome is a prequel to the a reimagined Battlestar Galactica series. It was a web series.
Oh,
It
maybe I'll
was
have to watch that because I didn't watch it.
it chronicled the early adventures of young William Adama. 10 episodes. Looks like it was, about 20 minutes a piece or something. So it's from 2012.
I'll have to check that out.
So there you go.
Yeah.
We can't watch that for this sh show, though. It's too recent.
Yeah, we have to wait.
Right. We will cover that in 2000. What's our rule? 10 years?
Yeah, 10
Yeah.
years.
So 2022.
22.
We'll be podcasting from the nuclear wasteland.
That's right. If there
So.
is, we'll be writing like notes in bottles and throwing them in the water, and that'll be our form of podcasting.
I'll have my crank operated laptop. I'll have to wind the crank for like 3 or 4 hours before we start the show.
Yeah, that's
Hope
right.
the battery lasts long enough. My steampunk headset
We'll have to have a
goggles.
string between laptops, though, one long Ethernet cable.
Yeah. Well, humanity will probably live near each other because we'll all be huddled into the same
Yeah.
section of the earth.
I'll send Bomer to like wire us up
Yeah.
into the wasteland.
Bomer will be the traveling Ethernet repairman.
Yeah.
You
It's
know,
like the elevator.
make sure while well, he makes sure the elevators are working. He travels around with his family, and he's like constantly have to yell at his kids because they're using up like the power in his traveling internet mobile.
Who's on the internet?
I'm trying to get this rig situated to connect Colorado to New York for
Yeah.
Retrocast.
So do you want to start talking some books?
Yeah, I suppose that's what people expect.
Do you want to go first or you want me to go?
You can kick it off.
All right. Well, I'll kick it off in chronological order. So, we were doing a podcast, DC Weekly Reads, one day, and we were talking about Aquaman. And then we got into the conversation of Namor and how they're similar, and but Aquaman's usually the smarter of the two because Namor sort of like leads with emotion, and we were talking about him being the first mutant, you know, Marvel's first mutant. And me and Daryl said, "Well, when did they do that? Was that like John Byrne when he had his own Namor series, or what? You know, we weren't sure if they were like retcon that or what." So one of our listeners said, "No, they didn't retcon that. That was an early X-Men book. It was X-Men number 6." So I decided to read X-Men number 6. And this features Submariner. It also has some weird stuff in it, like some weird stuff that I'd be interested to know. You've read a lot of X-Men, especially in the Claremont years, right?
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know if Magneto has ever had this power besides in the Silver Age. I've never seen him manifest this. But this was the time where the Professor X and his team were fighting Magneto and his team quite a bit, like in early issues of X-Men. And they were taking a break. They're eating together. Jean's cooking for them. He realizes he reads an article. Professor X is at the breakfast table and he reads an article about Submariner and he says, "You know what? I think he's a mutant. We need to go after him." At that ex same moment, Magneto says the same thing. He says, "Wow, this guy's powerful. We need to bring him into the evil mutants." And he's with Toad and Mastermind, and he has Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch as well. But at this point in time, I do not believe he knows. I mean, that the kids know that Magneto's their father. So I don't think that's you. Didn't you read early X-Men, or was it just Fantastic Four?
Well, I mean, I haven't read the early X-Men recently because I was skipping those because I have read them in the past.
Oh, okay. I was curious though if you started off with like Fantastic Four number one and started working your way forward. I was wondering if you did it with X-Men. I read X-Men 1. I know either for this podcast or something else recently.
I think it was for Retro.
But then I didn't read the ones after it, and then I jumped to 6. So I don't the way that Stan Lee writes it, it's like they don't have a clue it's their father. But what's really interesting is the letters pages for this book. Because every single letter was like, "We love Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. Like, we love them, and they shouldn't be bad guys." Like, every letter was demanding that. Like, they're fantastic. You should make them good guys. And it's kind of weird that they turned out to be Avengers. Like, not so long afterward. But everybody in the letters pages was real fond of these characters, and then they were also saying, "Hey, could you make this a monthly title?" Because it wasn't monthly at the time; it was every other month. And I think Marvel was limited to distribution too. Like DC was distributing their books, so they would have like a limit on what books they can publish. And I think that's what's Marvel's strategy to like combine heroes, like in Tales to Astonish and Tales of Suspense. That way they can publish out two superheroes and have only one publication. But this issue was weird because they want to both recruit Submariner. So Submariner is under the water and he's pouting how he's like lost his kingdom at this point in time. He's only got some few loyalists. A lot of people have separated from him for whatever reason, and he's frustrated and he's pouting because he's like, "I love Sue," and I can't be with the woman I love. She's with Mr. Fantastic, and he's frustrated. Well, Magneto, he actually goes into astral form, and this is what I wanted to ask you. Has he ever been able to do like a Doctor Strange thing? Because I've never seen him do that. At the same time, Professor X does the same thing, and I've seen him in astral projections, you know what I mean? Like his head floating around and all this stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But him and Magneto both went underwater in their astral forms looking for Submariner. And Professor X is like, "I could search the ocean over and over again. I'm just gonna let Magneto find him, and then I'll find Magneto." But Magneto uses his. He actually finds Submariner, and he tries to bring him over, and it looks like he will. But then the X-Men get involved, and at this point, Magneto has this like huge magnet on an island, and they're gonna attack the X-Men. They like bring down their plane, and the X-Men are still training and. Like Angel's arrogant, like he thinks he can go head to head with Namor because they can both fly. He's like, "Well, I'm agile, I can dodge you and all this stuff." And Namor's like, but I can do all that. Plus, I have super strength." So he just like tosses him like a ant, just like wham. And then Beast also tries to par against him. Beast is a little has some strength, and he's as agile but can't fly. But he's no match for Namor because of his. But they work on him as a team. And at this point, like Cyclops is kind of a jerk, which I think he's always been, as far as like trying to lead the team or trying to be the one, studious X-Men, the one that always listens. And they eventually fight for him. They capture Quicksilver, and they kind of use him against Scarlet Witch, and they both get freed at the end by Magneto somehow. Like he frees them, but it was a cool interaction between Submariner, fighting the other, and then Mastermind. He does a lot of like tricks, playing with illusions and such, and. At this point, the X-Men already know it's illusion, so they kind of like walk through it. So it's like, what good is he? They're already trained to be smart on that. Let's see what else was unusual here. Not much other than Scarlet Witch are still. It seems like they're kind of like siding with Magneto, but they don't really believe in all his objectives, so you could see like signs of them crossing over. But there really was no conclusion other than Namor, destroying the magnet because he gets frustrated with Magneto because he tried to control him, and walking back and leaving in the ocean, and that was the first experience with the Marvel's first mutant.
Nice.
Yeah, and what's nice about these omnibuses is they do have the letters pages, so you can see what people were thinking back then.
Yeah, that is cool that the letters pages include there, because I haven't seen that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not real sure. I can't remember seeing Magneto use something like that before, but I don't remember something that detailed.
No,
Like you said,
Brian King actually pointed out to me, like I posted the cover image saying I was reading this for Submariner, and he says, "Well, yo, that issue has the weird Magneto power." So I don't know. So maybe it is something that just
sounds like it's
appeared
known
once.
for that. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing is Namor's a horn dog
Yeah.
because he became like. Okay, he's pouting over Sue, Sue Storm of the FF, but then he runs into Scarlet Witch and becomes infatuated with her. And that's when Pietro was captured, Namor started to help Scarlet Witch because she started pouting. So he's always for the women, that's for sure. And when Magneto starts talking to her, like putting the woman in her place. Namor ain't gonna put up with that. He's like, "You treat women with respect."
Nice.
Yeah. It was a fun issue. I like
That's cool.
Namor. I like to see what he's angry about.
He's definitely an interesting character in the Marvel Universe.
My next book has Namor in it too, and it was far superior to this, but it was he's a fascinating dude. He really is.
Well, my first book doesn't have Namor in it, but I'll select the one I'm gonna read because I'll keep it in old school Marvel. I was going to talk about Avengers number 8, and I've come to a point where I have to search our website to see what we've covered before to make
Yeah.
sure. And I don't think we've covered this one. I think I talked about the issue before. I think I talked about Avengers 7, or one of us did. We've talked about a number of different Avengers issues. I don't think we've covered this one, which is Avengers against Kang the Conqueror, who prior to this
I think we
had,
covered the one after, or the aftermath of that adventure.
Well, I was trying to. The issue after this is the first appearance of Wonder Man, which I
Yeah.
think you might have talked about. It didn't come up when I searched it, but
No,
I think you
we
might have
didn't
talked.
talk about it, but
No? Okay.
the Kang the Conqueror one, they mentioned it in the one where Cap is assembling the new team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't remember what issue that is.
Prior to this issue, Kang had appeared before in Fantastic Four, which is one of the neat things about reading early Marvel is seeing how the universe comes together, and that they're already there's some doggy on your end.
Yeah, she's going. We have good weather today. So what Harley does to celebrate is she goes in and then she comes out, and then she goes in and she goes out.
There's the door noise.
Yeah, special effects. And then sometimes she'll get her squeaky toy. But go ahead, Avengers number six.
So yeah, that he had appeared, Kang had appeared in Fantastic Four 19 and Fantastic Four Annual number 2. So I think it's cool that early on, you're already seeing the editor's notes and stuff, and you're seeing them bring villains into different books and stuff.
Yeah,
But
just like Submariner from FF was
yeah,
recently in FF.
right. And I like the notations on the credit box. We have Stan Lee, our answer to Victor Hugo, Jack Kirby, our answer to Rembrandt, inked by Dick Ayers, our answer to automation, and lettered by Sam Rosen, our answer to Artie Simek. That was amazing. But the issue opens with the Avengers being summoned to communicate with the Pentagon, So they go back to Avengers Mansion and set up their closed circuit TV channel to communicate with the Pentagon. And the Pentagon lets them know that a UFO appeared over top of Virginia, and they leveled an area of forest to make it into a landing strip. And so the army approached with tanks on the, and the UFO leveled the tanks, and Kang the Conqueror came out of the spaceship. So the Avengers quickly spring into action to confront Kang the Conqueror, ask him what he thinks he's doing, and Kang tells them that he's there to conquer the Earth, of course. So it's interesting to see, though, that from this point with, you know, Kang, the initial assault by the Avengers on Kang doesn't go very well, but then the undersecretary from the White House approaches from the Defense Department and walks up. Basically, he's got other official dudes with him, and walks right up to Kang the Conqueror to parlay. So this is where we get, you know, our backstory, where we have the editor's note from the Fantastic Four issues, and Kang talks about how after that earlier adventure he returned to, well, he was planning to return to the year 3000, but he actually overshot his mark and ended up in the year 4000. And in the 40th century, it's basically a world where things have become pretty barbaric again, but people are using the technology of earlier years. So he was pretty easily able to take their technology from them and make use of it. And then he's come to proclaim himself Kang, the first ruler of the 20th century. So, like, it looks pretty painful. Giant Man, after he's done talking, Giant Man comes up from behind him and grabs him by the arms and the legs, and it looks pretty painful. He, 'cause he grabs his arms in one hand and his legs in the other hand, and kind of bends both backward. But there's another scuffle for a few pages, and it ends up with Kang activating something on his ship that sucks all the Avengers into his ship, into separate compartments, and there's a electromagnetic field, and it causes Thor to revert back to Donald Blake, and holds the other Avengers in stasis. Fortunately, Wasp is able to get away before that happens, so her and Rick Jones sneak off to try to come up with a plan to rescue the rest of the Avengers, while Kang basically puts forth his demands, and the world, through the United Nations, the world mobilizes together. You know, all this happening in like three panels. You know, to unite. Basically, the first time it says that the delegates of the United Nations vote unanimously to oppose Kang. So probably the funnest part of the issue, though, is the plan that Rick Jones and Wasp come up with, is that Rick and the Teen Brigade come up and volunteer to Kang. Basically, they say, you know, we realize that Earth doesn't have a chance against you, so we want to be your lackeys. He's like, all right, you guys are wise beyond your years. You should become my first personal Earth servants. So they go into the ship. He says, get yourself familiar with my ship, and so that you're ready for my first commands, basically. And not long after, he says, you got enough time, though. I got something I want you to bring out. So he directs them to this orange cylinder-looking weapon thing. And as they're coming out, they purposely pretend to drop it by accident. And that's like a distraction. So that Rick and two of the other Teen Brigade, they can go try to find the Avengers, and they get to a room and they say, there's these two flashing lights on the wall, and they like, that must be important. And so Rick's just like, oh, I'll push him and see what happens. So unfortunately for them, what happens is that it releases the Avengers from the stasis ray, and everyone's pretty much okay, except for Iron Man takes a little bit more time than the rest to get back in action because of his heart condition. He's got to wait to kind of reboot. And from there, it's kind of a pretty typical fight. The way that they overcome Kang is kind of interesting, that Hank Pym comes up with this chemical that he can shoot that will disintegrate. It's this acid-based solvent that'll disintegrate fabric. It's because they realize that a lot of Kang's powers are coming from his suit, so they want to start disintegrating his suit. And they're surrounding him. He says, "Well, in the world of the future, we are immune to radiation, but you are not. And so I use my greatest weapon, radioactivity." And his helmet starts to emanate radioactivity. Cap is blocking a lot of it from with his shield. But then Thor is able to absorb a bunch of the radiation with his hammer, and since it's a concentrated blast that he shoots back at Kang, it's too much for Kang, for even him. He's got to retreat to his ship. But
Does it actually dissolve his costume though? Like, is he looking like nude after a while, or?
no, it just kind of breaks it up. He still looks pretty much the same. It just Kirby draws it in such a way that there's some pieces that are starting to fall away and stuff, but there's no real it doesn't really fully disintegrate it, so it definitely doesn't it
Take
only
his
works to
clothes
an
off.
extent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it says on the cover it says, "Wait till you learn his surprising identity," and it doesn't really follow through on that promise.
Yeah. Who's the teen brigade again besides Rick?
I don't know if they have specific identities or not. They certainly don't. They certainly don't identify. If they do, it's elsewhere. They certainly don't identify them here.
Are they in costume?
They're just in normal clothes,
Okay.
and they look they. But they definitely do. They definitely remind me of like what's it called, Scrapper and those dudes from
No,
DC,
from the News Legion,
the
Newsboy
Newsboy
Legion.
Legion, like a little maybe like a little bit older than them, but
Yeah.
there's one guy that kind of looks a little hardier than the rest, and he's got a sharp hat on and stuff. He kind of looks like he
Then
could
do you
beat the
have a guy that
Scrapper, but
looks like Brainy with the glasses and
not as much. It's they're definitely not a one for one, but yeah, they're he stands out because he's got the hat, but otherwise the other three are just kind of, there's like a blonde dude, a redhead, and a brunette men. But yeah, it was a good issue though. It was entertaining because it had its fun moments with the Teen Brigade, and
Yeah.
the thus has it ever been, thus will it ever be, so long as mankind is in jeopardy, so long as the mother planet Earth may be menaced, so long as the forces of evil dare to challenge justice, the Avengers will stand. Next issue, a new problem confronts the Avengers.
Wonder Man.
Yes.
I have that issue.
Number eight.
I'm missing a lot of the early issues, like in the 20s and such, and the single digits. But
Yeah.
I have that one, the Wonder Man one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I remember, is you getting that issue or something.
I bought it. I didn't cover it. I think I covered and then it has to do with Zemo again, because I mean not Zemo, but Kang, he comes back. It's like issue 16. Because no, I'm getting confused with Zemo, because the issues prior to that deal with the death of Zemo, and then when Cap comes back, he forms the other team, and that's when Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch join, along with Hawkeye too. So it's a pretty cool lineup of villains. The first Suicide
There you
Squad.
go.
So my next one is Defenders number 93. And this, I am having a hell of a time with this epic collection. I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Nice.
But I love the Defenders. So this is J.M. DeMatteis and Don Perlin with Joe Sinnott as inking. Jim Shooter is the editor in chief. Wow. He's been our editor in chief for longer than I imagined. This is a 50-cent issue of the Defenders, and it opens up really cool because Namor is just swimming with a dolphin, enjoying the water. And as he's swimming, he runs into Lady Dorma, and that's his beloved woman that was murdered or killed. And they buried her and everything. And he's like, "What are you doing alive? Why are you chained to this plant?" You know. And that's the mystery behind this. But the Defenders are kind of chillaxing after their bout with Eternity in the previous one, where Eternity kind of like let pieces of him go to explore what humanity was, and that turned into a nightmare because they didn't want to rejoin with them, which could have ended the Earth. And so they're there drinking tea and enjoying their time, and Son of Satan says, "Hey, Doctor Strange, I need to talk to you in private." So they like form a weird mystical globe over each other, and like Nighthawk is like, "Why can't they just go to the other room and talk?" But Nighthawk comes in with ice cream, you know, and he's like, "Hey, you know, I bought some chocolate chip ice cream for everyone." And he starts passing the ice cream around. And while they're in there, Son of Satan's like, "Hey, you know, something's going on. We need to talk about it without the others knowing." And then they hear a scream, and Nighthawk falls to the ground. And they're like, "Oh no, what happened to Nighthawk?" Well, I guess in previous issues, the Defenders used a mystical spell which took some of the life essence out of the core members and gave them back to Nighthawk as he was dying. Well, that life essence that was in his body depleted, so now he's back into a coma, and Hulk gets mad. Like, he's B Bruce Banner eating ice cream, and he's like, "This doesn't make any sense. I can't get any pulse." And he just starts, as he's over Nighthawk's body, he's like freaking out, and he turns to the Hulk, and he's, "Why is Hulk's friend dead?" So Nighthawk's there. And Namor goes back to Atlantis, and he's like, "Here's Lady Dorma." And everybody's like, Why are they listening to Dorma? Like, even the chief guy there, he's like, "Lady Dorma's dead. What are you doing? What do you do bringing her?" And she's like talking like she can manipulate the thoughts of each individual, and she's like brainwashing Submariner. For some reason, he wants to invade London. Like, that's the first thing he wants to do. "I'm gonna celebrate the return of my lady by invading London." And she's using her manipulation powers. You're like, why is she able to manipulate people's powers? But like people in the crowd to like punch other civilians and stuff and cause chaos. And so while that's going on, the Defenders are trying to figure out what's going on with Kyle, and they don't know what to. They said, "Hey, they saved his life. He's not dead, but he's in a coma, and we don't know how." Well, he's not in a coma. He's paralyzed. So he's in the bed. He can't move anything from his neck down. And they're all in shock and horror. And Hulk is like, "No magician fixed bird nose once. He better do it again." And Doctor Strange's like, I can't summon a spell to do this." And meanwhile, Wong interrupts them, and he's like, "You gotta turn the TV on. Submariner's in London destroying stuff." So the Atlanteans are attacking. It has an interlude, a weird interlude with Patsy Walker, who's Hellcat, and she's reminiscing over her mom, and she never loved her mom, But now she's feeling like she misses her, and she's like, "Why do I miss you?" And she's throwing her picture against the wall. And meanwhile, there's like darkness. Two shadows come over her and attack her, but you don't know what they are, and that's just an interlude. I love comics back in this day. This is my favorite time period because they have like a formula for writing stories that have like three plot threads, like
Right.
one that's going to end, one that's in the middle, one that's, you know, at the beginning. And I love that. I mean, I freaking love it. Even in the Rebirth titles, I'm really enjoying Harlequin right now by Palmiotti and Amanda Connor because they have that formula. Like, it has a plot that's going on, you know, like three plot lines, and I love
Yeah.
that. And they're all in different forms. It's just a formula that I just love because it works. It works really well for a monthly comic to do that.
Definitely.
It's like a perfect storytelling technique.
That's definitely my favorite
Isn't it for like a
formula.
for like a single issue experience? It's like the best, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And
Because it makes you want to come back, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Like 70s and 80s.
Yeah, it's.
Kind of when that was in its prime.
It's fantastic.
I
So,
just reading, like I was just gonna say that reading New Teen Titans again from Kid to Flash. I mean, when they were firing on all cylinders, it just was so much going on, and it's perfectly balanced.
I don't understand why they don't do that anymore. I know they tend to write in six issue arcs now. And it's like one story, and I know they're writing for the trade, and I understand it, but like for the monthly experience, I wish they'd go back to that old format.
Yeah, I wonder too if it's for the writers, it's harder to fit everything in because you don't, you know, they're faster reads. You don't, the pages aren't as dense.
That
There's not as much material in the issue.
that's true. There it These issues took, you know, 20 minutes or 15 minutes to read. A new issue is like 5 to 10, so it's like half the time.
Right.
But I love this formula. This is a great formula. So they can the defenders go down to fight Submariner, and Doctor Strange ports them over there. Clea and who else stayed back? I think it was just Clea. Maybe. Yeah, it was just Clea stayed back to help Kyle as he was in his coma. So Doctor Strange shows up with Son of Satan, Valkyrie, and the Hulk, and they poured in and they start talking to Namor, and Namor's like, "You don't raise your hand to me, magician," you know. And then he says, "To arms, my warriors!" And they all attack. They jump on the Hulk. Hulk swats them away, starts destroying their vehicles. The defenders are doing pretty good fighting the Atlanteans. And then this huge I don't know what kind of it's like called a sonic scrambler comes and does a sound and knocks all the defenders helpless. And then Namor puts them aboard that a sea vessel, and they're all trapped, and they're all like he won't let He has a mask over Doctor Strange, so he can't do a spell, a verbal spell. Son of Satan, he's got like this weird, he's got weird like cuffs on him, like on his legs and his arms. Hulk is in water. I don't know, like something to keep him calm. I don't know. And Valkyrie, this is something I never realized about Valkyrie, is that her weakness is being around like other women, like if other women are surrounding her, she won't have powers. So that's what he has. He has other women surrounding her. And Lady Dorma starts beating the crap out of Valkyrie. And Valkyrie starts kicking her and hitting her. And when she does that, she breaks the spell. And you find out that Lady Dorma is Nebulon, the Celestial Man. So, He's a Defenders villain. And there's even one scene where Namor's like, I wish I could find the dialogue for it. Oh, he says, When I think that I held you in my arms and let my lips brush against yours, I'm sickened. Because Nebulon turns he's like a guy with long white hair. He's got like a gold body, and in his midsection it's like eternity. It's like made up of stars, you know. And when he turns into his like natural form, he's like this ugly bestial sea creature with tentacles and stuff. And Namor starts to throw him around, but when he starts to take on Nebulon, there's a spaceship, a celestial spaceship, that beams aboard him and saying that he has to suffer the High Tribunal. So they actually take him away. And then so Lady Dorma is gone, even though it was never really Lady Dorma. So they're Doctor Strange and them are consoling Namor, but still he got away with invading London, and there's no penalty for that amongst friends. But he invaded London for no reason, really. He just did it because Lady Dorma told him to. But it was a cool issue. I really had a kick, got a kick out of it, and it has like several plot threads. It has the Nighthawk, you know, going into a coma. It has the main thread, which is the Submariner thread, and then it has that Hellcat stuff interlude. So yeah, it's got that, definitely has that three formula thing going on. And I'm gonna keep probably reading some more Defenders for this because I'm enjoying it so much.
And you read that in a trade?
I'm Epic Collection. This
Epic
is,
Collection, okay.
This is Epic Collection Volume 6.
Is that the... I'm just looking on Amazon. Is that the one called Six-Fingered Hand?
Yeah, Six-Fingered Hand, yep. By
cool.
DeMatteis and Don Perlin.
Nice.
I love these Epic Collections. I like how they package them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're cool. Yeah, that looks like a really good volume. I definitely want to dig into that Defenders era at some point myself.
Well, I've been exploring a lot of like in this show, Doctor Strange,
right, yeah.
Defenders, Son of Satan and Ghost Rider, you know, some of the darker areas, and I'm really enjoying it. So
yeah.
Fun issue. That was my favorite of the bunch this week. It was one of those ones that I just wanted to keep reading, but I have to keep up with my DC reading, so I just limited it to one issue.
Yeah, those Epic Collections are easy to kick back with and just dig in.
Yeah.
Keep reading. All right, well, I'll keep going with mine in chronological order, but I'm jumping forward a couple of decades myself. And I did post a little bit of a preview to this one on Facebook. They read Amethyst Princess of Gemworld number one, volume one, number one, because there's like three of these. I think that we talked about Amethyst a long time ago, but maybe just in the context of the preview, the 16-page preview.
Yeah.
But I end up scoring most of all three of the volumes of Amethyst last year for 25 cents a piece. And I've been having sitting around waiting to dig into them.
Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. So this is from 1983. Dan Mishkin and Gary Cohen are the writers with Ernie Colon as the artist.
Did you get a full run?
I have to double check. I think I'm missing like a couple of issues here and there.
One of those issues is hard to find. It's a Crisis on Infinite Earths tie-in.
That I think, I'm pretty sure I did get that one.
Oh, cool.
So that's cool. Because most of the time when I end up getting most of the issues of a run in 25 cents, the one that's missing is the one that's expensive, of course, like Omega Man with the Lobo appearance, or Birds of Prey with the Nightwing kissing scene.
Yeah.
But anyways, this issue, this is a very much a classic epic story setup where you have a character, you establish them in their current world, and then you introduce a change. It's very like Harry Potter, that kind of classic setup. And it's very much like it's like a fantasy story, fantasy genre in a lot of ways, where we have young Amy Winston. I think she's like 13 or so. She and her parents come home, and there's a gift waiting for her, and she opens it up, and it's an amethyst necklace, and her parents think that's not the present that we got her, and I'm like, well, we can't say anything now because she's real excited about it. But when she puts it on, as soon as she puts it on, she's this ogre appears in a room and grabs her and takes her through this portal, where as she's going through the portal, she changes her body, changes, she becomes older. And she's brought into Fortress Opal, where eventually she's rescued by a man named what's his name? Was this man? He brings her. He's like an elf. Granch, his name is. He's like an elf-looking kind of bald dude, a warrior. And he brings her to an old woman named Citrina, and he has to stop Sardonyx, as who's like speaking of like Snidely Whiplash. He kind of looks like him with his mustache, but he's Lord of Serpents, and he's pursuing Amethyst and Citrina. Citrina uses the last bit of her power that she has at the moment to warp them to Castle Amethyst. So Amy, she's overwhelmed by everything that's going on. She's some attendants come to her and bathe her and get her a change of clothes, and then then we get the exposition of Citrina telling her, this is what happened. Your parents were Lady and Lord Amethyst, and they were loved by everyone in Gemworld, all of them except for the Lord Opal, who forged a bond with Sardonyx and killed your parents. And Citrina, she was able to get their child, who was just a baby at the time, away from them and sent her to Earth until it was time for her to come back. So, as is usually the case in stories like these, Amy's initial reaction is to sort of reject this change and reject this history. And she wants to go back home. And Citrina says, well, I will send you back home, but at this point, as the Castle Amethyst is attacked by Opal's forces, Sardonyx says, well, I can't send you back just yet. We need your power to defend the castle. And sure enough, even though Amy is pretty inexperienced at this point, she is able to help boost the defenses of the castle and fight off Sardonyx. Eventually, they have to retreat. Sardonyx has to go back to Opal, tell him that he failed. Opal says, I'm not going to kill you, but I'm going to keep you around till I need you again, but you failed me. Amy manages to go back through the portal when her parents are just about to call the police. As time hasn't passed, time passes a lot faster in Gemworld. That's why when she goes there, she ages from 13 to 20. And so they can also feel comfortable addressing her in skimpier clothing. But she comes back, and she has been gone long enough that they know she was really was gone, her parents do. But just for a few minutes, but nonetheless, they're wondering, what happened. But Amy in bed that night, she's thinking, well, she had told her parents it was a dream, but she says, I know it wasn't a dream. I got to go back and just see. I'll come right back home, she's telling her dog. And so she, at the end of the issue, she arrives back. And sure enough, it was real, of course. But one, it gets points for the fact that Amy has a dog, Taffy, and the way they depict the dog is very true. The dog's the only one that really seems to know, like, he witnesses, or she, I'm not sure, Taffy's probably a girl, witnesses Amy going through the portal and leaving. But and at the end of the issue, Taffy's gonna stay right there by her bed and take care of her after she had her bad dream and stuff like that. But Ernie Colon does a really great job as both art both penciler and inker. I was impressed throughout the issue the way I really liked his page layouts. There's a nice variety throughout the entire book, like page by page. It's got a really nice flow to it. You do have your pages that have your standard s square, rectangular panels, but the layout of them is continues to be varied. Then, as the book goes on, he uses some layouts that have two columns. One, the column on the right hand side is just a full page length. Page 16, there's a really huge face. Amethyst's face is really large on the right side of the page, and then there's a bunch of horizontal panels that go along the left hand side. When you get to the bottom of the page, the last word bubble on the page is belongs to the large face on the right side, which is really cool. He put some circles amidst the rectangular pages, and page 21, there's a cool shot where Amethyst is coming towards the camera or towards your eyes, and then behind her is like our six panels, kind of each one coming out from behind her and stuff. So there's just some examples, but it was something that I noticed as I was reading it, that Cologne keeps things definitely visually interesting. And not all artists are great designers. We've seen some, even in recent years, some pretty horrible costumes designed by artists that, in my opinion at least, that are otherwise decent. But Cologne's design for Amethyst's outfit that she changes into is pretty sleek and neat looking. And I also really like the design of Lord Opal. Opal, obviously being a darker gem, it's obviously makes sense as a choice for the villain. But instead of making him just black, he's sort of a blue color, but then there's black. He's got black lines all over his skin. And it just looks pretty neat. I like the way that he looks. It's a nice visual. So, it was cool. I liked it.
Yeah, I own these, but I don't think I've ever read any of them.
Yeah, I want to try to keep up with it.
I remember the only one I bought ever, like off the shelf. These ones I got in back issues, but the only one that I bought was the Crisis one because it was tied into that event. So that was the first one that I've owned, and that was the only one I read up until recently, because Amethyst was in like New 52's. One of their backup features, and I can't remember what book it was in, but it
Wasn't
was
it
Aaron LaPriestie.
Sword and
Yeah, Sword and
Sorcery?
Sorcery. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, I
Yeah, I
really
read a little
enjoyed
bit of
that.
that.
Yeah.
It's an interesting property, and didn't they do like some mini animated episodes or something like that?
They
On
did
like DC
recently,
Nation.
like DC
Yeah.
Nation. Yeah. It was really weird though. Like it wasn't anything like the comic for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it had like the basic, same basic setup, a different. I it, it
They made it more for kids. Like
yeah.
they downgraded it like an all, it wasn't even all ages, it was more for kids.
Yeah, which is inter with this. That's the interesting thing, like about Amethyst, at least this issue, and I think the tone is similar throughout. Why it's kind of struggled to find an audience, even though it's very good. But it, like on the surface, it looks like, especially back in the 80s, like boys might have looked at it and thought, "Oh, that's for girls," but it's not really. And it has like a lot of the tropes and a lot of the setup of like a classic fantasy story,
Yeah.
but it's definitely darker than something at least for younger kids, like for teens. I think it'd be fine at least in the 80s. Like nowadays, who knows what teens are looking at? But you know, when Amethyst first comes to, she's a 13-year-old girl that's just been put into a 20-year-old's body, and one of the first things that happens to her is that like is sardonyx ogres that work for him, they're told right before she's rescued, they're taking her away to present her to Lord Opal, and the two ogre like dudes basically are planning to rape her. Grant ourselves a few moments of amusements as well. Just a small detour, princess. Be nice, Amethyst. This will be much easier if you cooperate. So she initially like
That's
gets,
got dark themes.
yeah, usually initially gets she initially gets herself a few moments of time. It's the first time she uses any of her powers. She blasts the one guy with her amethyst gem, and then that's when Granch comes in to get her out of there. But so yeah, so it's interesting. It's I think one of the things that's good about it is that it has this sort of weird tone that doesn't like initially you don't initially know what the audience is, but I think that's part of the reason that it hasn't hadn't didn't sell well.
Yeah. Well, it must have sold decent enough because this one spawned another series that was 16 issues, so it couldn't have been horrible. And then another mini series, so she's had three series of her
Yeah,
own.
yeah. Yeah,
So
not
it's
terrible,
had to
but
have had a some kind of following at least for them to say, let's do it again.
yeah, at least back then when sales were overall much better.
Yeah.
You know, they could publish something like that, at least a couple series of it.
Yeah, I should dig into this at some point 'cause I did enjoy that backup feature. So my next choice, what I wanted to cover was more Uncanny X-Men, exploring Alpha Flight, but I said, well, I'm gonna have all of Marvel as my choice, so I'll do something different. And I just read yesterday Wildstorm, which is the Warren Ellis relaunched of the DC books with John Davis Hunt. And
Right.
I really enjoyed it. And you see like links to Wetworks and all kinds of things, Stormwatch, and for sure most of it was Wildcats. But I wanted to an IO was mentioned in there, which was big in like Gen 13. So like it like short does the foundation for a whole universe, and I was like, oh, you know, I'll explore some of that. So I went back to the original Stormwatch, which was Image, and this was like a collaborative effort. It was Brandon Choi and Jim Lee were the co-creators and did the story. But the actual writer was, I can't remember what his, it doesn't even say who actually did the words, but let me see if it says in another issue. I can't remember who the Sean Reffner does some of the wording. And I'm going to cover 3 through 5 because I've already done 1 and 2, I think, on this podcast. If not this, then something else. And 3 through 3 ended the first arc, which was kind of it didn't really get you to know the characters. It kind of got you to know the power sets and what Stormwatch was. It's like an organization that protects the Earth with satellite above there, and there's a guy called Weatherman that kind of coordinates things. And Stormwatch are the actual like soldiers that go put into play. And they have like some of the popular ones are canon. He's a lot of the power sets are so similar. Like a matter of fact, in the letters pages, they said this is like great comics, but we really want you to explore some of, give these characters some personality so we at least know the difference between this character and this character. So like people are recognizing early on that there's just a whole lot of characters and they're not giving them distinct voices. There's D.Va, who
Interesting.
I talked about, who has that sonic sound. There's so many characters in this. This could be like the Legion of Superheroes. There's just so much. It's overwhelming at first. Battalion, they're probably the biggest Stormwatch player that in popularity was Backlash. He's kind of the guy that can like he has these extenders that whips that can come out. They're like cybernetic whips that can, do various things. He was probably the he had his own title at one point too, and he was also in the Kindred with Grifter. And who else is this guy? I can't remember the this. There's so many characters I get lost in. There's Fahrenheit, who's got fire powers. There's Fuji, who's this big guy, like super strong. Battalion is like Cable. It looks like he could shoot out energy of some sort, and he also carries huge guns at this time. But the first arc, they're actually fighting this one villain called Regent, and he's in a nuclear reactor, and he wants to destroy the nuclear reactor. And I think one of the guys' name is Winter, and he's able to absorb energy, so he's using all his energy trying to keep this reactor stable, but he's not doing very good at it because Regents kind of has him strapped to a table or handcuffed. He can't do much. So he's in a bind, and they send Stormwatch down there to, and then at one point they're like, okay, this reactor's gonna go out and blow out a whole area. So Weatherman actually sends down something else to destroy it ahead of time. So he's willing to kill his own soldiers. Like he doesn't even think twice. Like he's more robotic response than a I'll think about these people's lives. He'll just say, oh, I'm gonna just blow this shit up. And they eventually fight Regent and defeat him with another squad. There's like wild there's Stormwatch A and Stormwatch B and all these different groups. And they use both squads to come down there and fight Regent, and they stop the reactor from blowing up. So they kind of save the day, and that was the end of 1, 2, and 3. And then the next issue arc starts, where three Stormwatch scientists are kind of exploring this air this it's kind of like the episode of Buck Rogers with the vampire in it. And they find a ship that's just floating out there, and they're like, okay, we gotta go see what the ship is. And they board the ship, and it's really Daemonites, who the villains kind of like in Wildcats. They like possess these scientists and turn them into this thing called Wild Guard, and they look very much like Liefeld. This is Brett Booth, which we're seeing his art with Norm Rapman inks on Titans right now. His art, in my opinion, is much better in the past because it looked more full. Like now he draws it and he's got like this lanky, skinny thing going on. Like you could tell, like everybody's like just really thin. They have like thin legs and they're long. This one they more look more proportionate, at least in my opinion. So I prefer this, and I don't know if it's because Trevor Scott is inking him versus Norm Ratman, but it looks more Liefeld-esque. Maybe Jim Lee-ish too. I don't know. It's kind of a hybrid between the two. But these Daemonites go back on the ship. Weatherman's oblivious to what's going on, and they start destroying stuff. And one of the main women there that's in charge of stuff is also dating Backlash. Matter of fact, it opens up with Backlash. He kind of wants to propose to her, but it comes off like really awkward, and it sounds like he's trying to break up with her, even though he's not. And then the alarm goes off, and she has to go to work. And also, he gets interrupted by Fuji and all those other guys. So he never got to propose to her, but she goes to her room, and that's where the Daemonites are there, and they kind of take over her body. She kills one of them, even though I think she's when the Daemonites are in that body, she ends up killing her own people. So she kills one of them, and then she gets absorbed, and then the whole 2 issues are them fighting one another, and then Backlash defeating her, but at the cost of her soul and personality, because she's in a coma at the end of the issue. So Backlash lost his woman over this whole fiasco, and he doesn't know what to do at the end of it. Like, he doesn't know how to recover her personality. He wants to go after the Daemonite that took it, because he thinks by reabsorbing the Daemonite with her body, because he separated them and thinks that it caused her to go into a coma. He thinks that by reuniting it, he'll get her soul back and she'll be able to function. So that's what they're going to end up doing, is going after that Daemonite to see if they can capture it and reunite it with her body, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's interesting to see where this leads, because this team does eventually become like the authority type, so we'll see what happens. It's interesting because I haven't read it before.
Yeah, I remember back when around when it was coming out, I read a bunch of The Authority, but that was kind of my main exposure to that environment or to that world or whatever. Was
Yeah, the
just through The Authority.
letters pages, like I said, are real interesting, because they're people saying, you need to give these people distinctive voices. But we love your book, but we'd like to see these people have distinctive voices, like in Legion or other teams. They compare them to other teams. And they said it's hard to tell their power bases apart, because they're either strong, or they're blasting things, but there's not a whole lot else. So there were comments like that, and then there were also comments about, like, this might be the time period where the downfall of comics started to happen. Just you can kind of get that voice and tone, that the popularity had hit, and this is like when on its downslide, when comics shops are starting to go under. You kind of get the by reading the letters, you can kind of gauge what was happening. It's pretty cool to see the letters.
Yeah, it definitely is nice to have that so you can get a snapshot of the reaction of people at the time.
There's a lot of people in these back issues that said, "I just dumped all of Marvel, and now I'm only buying Image."
Nice. All right. Well, I'm not jumping too far forward in time since the last thing that I covered only a few years this time. But a while back, I think it was maybe even last summer, I had talked about the first issue of Slash Maraud. And I had picked up the rest of the miniseries after reading that. But then, you know how it is,
Yeah.
just kind of drifted away and forgot
Squirrel.
to follow up on it. Yep. So I was looking through and I was reminded of these, and so I thought, man, I would really like to continue and finish that series. So I grabbed number two and read it for this episode. It's called Damazons and the Family Unit is the title of the episode or the issue. It's I think like last time by Doug Munch and Paul Galassi, co-creators, writer and artist there, with Adrian Roy, stalwart from the 80s at DC as the colorist. But she
I
does a
like
nice
that
job in this
cover.
issue. Yeah, those are the Damazons that you're seeing there.
Yeah.
Very Mad Max Fury Road kind of esque when you encounter them in the issue. But so going back to my memory of the first issue, kind of I had to sort of read a couple pages to kind of jog it, but when we left things.
Very, very similar to the Stormwatch because I read those so long ago. Like,
Yeah.
it must have been 2 years ago on this show.
Yeah. Yeah, and you kind of have to sometimes though you can jump in and after a couple pages you start to remember, and if it's written well, like this one was, it actually was written in such a way that it you know, for readers at the time it was only a month break, but even so, as you know, when you read a lot of comics, even a month can sometimes be hard to remember, depending on how much of an impression the issue made on you. And thankfully, I mean, Slash Marad number one is a very unique issue, so it did leave a good impression on me that this brought back reading. And when we left things off towards the end of the first issue, Slash and this woman, Wild Blue, were trying to escape this Las Vegas club, had fallen through the floor right in front of a cage with a genetically manipulated panda, so that the panda is more of like a grizzly. The world of Slash Marad is basically post-alien invasion by these shapers, these bipedal beings that have basically like fuzz balls with eyes for heads. They're basically terraforming the Earth to make it like their former planet, and that will mean that in 5 years it will no longer be habitable for humans. Well, there's this one guy with one shaper called Dr. X that is basically going against the rest of his kind and wants to prevent that from happening. And Slash is most humans are basically just kind of subservient to the shapers. Slash is known as the only human to have killed shapers and survived. So the confrontation that ended last issue starts off this one, and Slash and Wild Blue have to figure out a way to get away from Commander Karg, who's a shaper that has come to kind of put the smack down, because the commander that was in charge of this area, he has pretty much just kind of gone native. I mean, he's not betraying the shapers, but he's very complacent, just gets drunk all the time, and it's basically just like, let's just wait the 5 years and then we'll have the planet. So they get away by releasing the panda, the beastly panda, from its cage, which causes enough pandemonium that they're able to escape. They do have to fight some more once they get to Wild Blue's motorcycle, because it's surrounded by some shapers. So they have to open fire and basically get out of there amidst a lot of pursuit. Slash is driving the motorcycle, and Wild Blue digs into the storage compartment on the back where he's got some explosives, and so she's able to start tossing some explosive at the ships that are pursuing them and cause those to explode. So we end sort of that first scene with them getting out of Las Vegas, and as far as Wild Blue knows, Mr. X is in what used to be called Utah. So they head out in that direction. And then we have a really sudden sort of shift to another scene where there's a man, sort of like middle-aged, bald man, and his slightly larger wife. They are role playing as Mark Anthony and Cleopatra. And it's kind of like they're having a romantic moment, and this man dressed as Mark Anthony, he drops his robe, but then he's like, I gotta go bag us some supper. So,
He drops his robe and then goes to make dinner.
yeah. Well, to hunt dinner, because he's gonna change his outfit. He's got like striped boxer shorts on underneath, and he puts on like this Davy Crockett hat, like raccoon hat, and likes his hunting clothes, and basically is dressed up like Davy Crockett. He grabs a rifle. So his wife's saying, watch out for the shapers and the families. He's like, yeah, and the Necroids and Zen Hogs and Congo Corsairs, et cetera, et cetera. He says, only thing a body don't got to fear these days is Indians. And I tell you, maybe being an IBM accountant wasn't so bad. So this guy used to be an accountant for IBM, and now the world has changed. They're living in this cabin near Utah. So he goes out. 3 hours pass, 6 hours pass, as his wife is getting worried, and then finally there's a knock on the door. She opens it, and it's him, but he falls to the floor in front of her, and his back is full of arrows. And so it turned out to be awful foreshadowing that he says you don't have to fear Indians, because a very noticeably white guy jumps through the window at that point, dressed like one, says, forget the Alamo, remember the Bates Motel. So
Wow, that's weird.
it's super weird. And basically this is an attack of who we learn to be, the family. And it's basically like this group of humans that have taken advantage of the alien invasion, the collapse of society, to run rampant, and they are obsessed with slasher movies and serial killers. Say, in the name of the great God Manson and his acolytes Bundy, Speck, Ramirez, Gates, and Gein. There's like they're all dressed up real weird. One guy's got a chainsaw, and other one's got a tomahawk, and Jason lives, and Freddy's back. So that introduces us to the family. Meanwhile, we've in the desert, we meet Angela and the Damozans from the cover, and so it's a female group. They have like motorcycles and like a big wheel, like those big wheel monster cars with spikes on the wheels. So it's just like post-apocalyptic Amazons, and they have a car like a convoy, just like in Mad Max and stuff. And Angela, she's the one with the army helmet that's got slash at gunpoint on the cover. She's got this like robotic hawk that she sends out, and I could take pictures and bring them back to her, and she could like take the top off or the neck off of the hawk, and prints out pictures of what it, and that's how she gets a glimpse of Slash and Wild Blue on their motorcycle, and they're going to go investigate it. We get a little interlude with the Shapers that are pursuing the way that they figure out where they went is they have this like organic technology. Is like it just looks like a, it looks kind of like a pile of intestines, honestly. That it, but it's like a surveillance device, and they have a recording of the conversation that Slash and Wild Blue had last issue about Dr. X and their plans to go find him and stuff. So Slash and Blue, they have a an interaction with the Damazons. There's a bit of a standoff at first, and then ultimately Slash convinces them to join their cause, to go after Dr. X. And Angela basically gives it up to like the rest of her crew whether they want to come along or not. It seems like most of them do, but when they, but some of them are a little nervous when they find out that they're going to have to go through family territory, which, so that's why we were introduced to them earlier. We see them, they kind of have, they have a their hangout is the Bates Memorial Hotel, and their place, they got like a, they have a shelf full of skulls, and they have a lamp made out of skin, just like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And so they head into family territory, and pretty quickly they run into the group that that attacked the couple that we saw earlier, and they've actually seemed to have like cannibalized the woman. And all that's left of her is her bones when Slash and the Damazons attack and take them out pretty easily, get information from them. The guy that they leave alive until to get information from, he tells them that they show him a photo of Dr. X. Has he ever seen this man? He says, yeah, we got him in our basement. So that's how they know that they got to head to the Bates Memorial Hotel, and base launch an assault on that. They take out most of the family. There's one who makes a break for the cellar, and important to note that this character, he's kind of got like a, he's got like what's his face from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Sort of face, but he's wearing like purple striped pants.
Leatherface.
Leather face, yeah. So they get down, they follow him down to the basement, and there's a Leatherface looking dude with a chainsaw, and then they see like they have like whips and chains and like torture devices and stuff like that down there. And it's a standoff. They're like, what are we gonna do? Then they notice there's some blood, some fresh blood seeping out from underneath a crate. They kick the crate over, and it turns out that the individual that they followed down the stairs with the striped purple pants is the one that's bleeding out from underneath the crate. The individual that is now wearing what must be a mask is wearing different clothing, and so the last panel is Slash recognizing that this leather face that they're confronted with must actually be Dr. X in disguise. So assumedly he, you know, not knowing who it was that was coming down the stairs, that it was his rescuers, he kind of like took the shape of a human and put the mask on. But we shall see. But yeah, very did not disappoint after the first issue. If not, if anything, this is even crazier, and was very entertaining. So I think I'm gonna get try to get to the other issues sooner than it took me to get to this one.
Yeah, sounds good. I don't have this.
It's a shame too, because it's just kind of in obscurity because I don't think it's ever been collected or anything. So it's too bad. It was published by DC before Vertigo.
Yeah.
So it just has like a mature reader notification on it, but it's unless it just like takes a shit in the rest of the series, unless the rest of the issues, which I don't expect. But the writing is great, just very bizarre, and Paul Gulacy art is really good. I'm a
Well, it
fan of
happened around the
styles.
time of Crisis too, so 1987.
Yeah. So it'd be cool, and more people should know about it.
Yeah, I need to read this. The art on the covers is fantastic.
The
Paul
nice thing,
Gulacy I like too, so.
yeah, I mean,
Plus, Doug Munch is a good writer. Like, he writes good Batman, he writes good Moon Knight. I mean, he's good. It sounds like he's able to kind of like cut loose and build his own world here.
yeah, and do like different styles and stuff because he's written a lot of different types of things, and one the good the positive side of things is that these seem to be pretty cheap to get. So I mean, I found them all I think for 50 cents or 25 cents, but even if you get them online, I think you can usually get them pretty cheap. Like my comic shop has them for like $1.70 a piece.
Yeah.
So it's at least they're not hard to find, it seems.
Yeah, I think I need to make a my comic shop purchase 'cause I might consider getting those. But I want to there's a couple of Flash annuals I'm missing and Secret Origins, the one in the 90s or 80s that I want to complete. So, yeah, I'll see. Good stuff. Anything else you want to pump? Pump.
Pump it up.
Pump it up.
Let me just get on my Reeboks and I'll pump those.
That's right.
There's some retro for you.
Yeah, the little basketball with the you'd pump into your shoes.
Yep. Until you lost circulation.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I had a pair of those at
I
one
did
point.
too. I did too.
And then you'd go up for an alley-oop.
I
You actually played basketball though, didn't you?
did, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't do
We
anything
had to wear
physical.
all the same types of shoes.
Yeah,
It's
you
not, I
couldn't.
mean, this will age me, but like the first year I played in freshman year, we had like Converse, which are kind of like the skateboarding shoe now. Like
Right.
they were the not the leather, but the cloth Converse, you know,
Canvas, I think, right?
canvas, yeah, canvas. That was the first year that we had it, and then after that, it was all leather. But
That's what my dad played.
Converse were like the worst shoes ever, too, like for basketball.
Yeah, now like you said, they're like a skateboarding style.
Yeah, it's more of a, what would you say, like look than it
Right.
is a
Fashion.
funk a funk a, it's more of a fashion than statement now than a function.
Right. Yeah, my dad played basketball in high school, and that's what they wore, were canvas Converse
Yeah.
when he played basketball. And the funny thing was is that then when I was in high school, I had canvas Converses, but it was the fashion thing. I used to wear
Yeah.
I had blue ones and I had green ones, and I used to wear like the mismatch, so I'd have like one blue one on and one green one
You're too damn cool, man.
on.
Damn. You're like making a statement. You're like, hey, look at me.
I was punk like Bomer.
Yeah,
I've been following after Bomer since like before I even knew him.
it's hard not to.
He's a trendsetter.
Yeah, he is. He's ahead of the times with his pretentiousness.
I know. I just gotta get into that black metal now.
I don't think the word existed before Bill. The word pretentious. It's like it was invented for him.
People's pinkies wouldn't even elevate until
No, until he did
he evolved biologically
it.
to.
He looks down upon everybody else. Trendsetter is what he is. Trendsetter.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I got nothing else.
Yeah, I guess
I was able.
Daryl will be pissed, but I guess it'll be a shorter episode.
Yeah, I was glad we were able to record. I like the fact that Rob joined us now, 'cause it could probably keep better show momentum. Like if one can make it and the other one can't, then two of us can still do it.
Right, that's what I was thinking too, like when you couldn't make it, but we had Daryl come on, and we can kind of just keep it rolling a little more consistency if we, because when it's just two people, schedules can end up like crisscrossing, and you could go like a couple months when you can't get together.
Right. So I
But
think we'll keep the flow going this way a little, the momentum.
keep it
Plus,
flowing.
I like doing this show because I always like conflicted with what to read. Like it's fun to figure out what to read.
It is, yeah. It's fun to make the choices, and it causes you to like have to make that choice, and then it's not like a burden, but like it just like you said, when you go on your squirrel sightings, sometimes it like brings you back, and then you grab something that, like for me, this episode, it's like I've been meaning to get back to Slash Marad. But it was because I was going and looking through for something to read that got me to think, oh, I better get back to this. So I might not have otherwise. So
Cool beans. All right, well, you can reach Chris
beans.
at MythMakingETC. Rob Krieger is at Rob Krieger. Did I do it wrong again?
Yep,
Krieger.
Krieger. You know what
God
I.
damn it!
You know what I did was
I'm gonna have to start spelling his name backwards. Isn't
here's
the
the
I before E? Isn't it spelled I before E?
KRYGI. Yeah, I before E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If
You
there
know
was an E there, I'd just take the I out.
what? Respell your name for me.
I'm gonna respell it with two E's. Krieger, E, like
Can't
G.
don't take the people are always that's what always happens to my last name is people take the E out.
Yeah.
But actually, you know what I came up with to remember it is that it rhymes with Bob Seger. So you gotta
Bob
stop
Seger.
yourself and think Bob Seger,
I'm not a
Krieger.
fan of Bob Seger,
You
though.
don't have to be. I'm not a fan. I don't know if I'm a fan. Like I mean I don't have anything against the guy, but just a memory tool, Mike. You don't have to commit to his recording catalog.
Bob Seger. Okay, I got it. Krieger. Got it.
Seeger Krieger.
Like even Martin on that other podcast that I really like to listen to, from the Nerdy Legion podcast. He always makes it a point to say, "I said it right," because he knows I say it wrong every damn fucking time.
Well, now you're equipped.
No, but I'll probably do it again.
Yeah, I'm not
It's
super
not
fan, but
because what I wouldn't have to do is like put an image of Bob Seger on my computer as a background.
oh, that's why you said
Record.
you don't. That's why you're upset that you don't like him.
I'm gonna have to put an image there so I remember. It's like, oh, every time I record, ooh, Bob Seger, Rob Krieger.
If it rhymed with Scarlett Johansson, you'd be happier.
Yeah, that was pretty easy to remember. I'm at Mike Myers Brunch on Facebook. You could go to Geek Brunch Podcast and click the like button. And our website is geekbrunchpodcast.com. And I think that's it for another 2 weeks. It was great talking to you, Chris. I needed to do this because I was working a lot, so I needed to talk some comics.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you, and hopefully sometime this year I'll see you.
Yeah, I'll let you know more, but I think we're doing heroes for sure.
Okay, yeah. Let me know about keep that in mind.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Good, okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.